Welcome to the Cool Tools Show. I'm Mark Frauenfelder, Editor-in-Chief of Cool Tools, a website of tool recommendations written by our readers. You can find us at cool-tools.org. I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Kelly, founder of Cool Tools. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, it's great to be here.
In each episode of the Cool Tools Show, Kevin and I talk to a guest about some of his or her favorite uncommon and uncommonly good tools they think others should know about. Our guest this week is Daniel Schaefer. Daniel's the kind of person who often finds himself in too many interesting situations to choose just a few to throw into a bio. But through his photography, his writing, and the various nonsense in his pockets, you may be able to glean just a little bit about what he brings to the table. I've known Daniel for a long time. He is one of the most interesting people I know. How's it going, Daniel?
Much appreciated. It's going good. Good to hear from you, Mark.
Yeah, it's a real pleasure to meet you, and I can't wait to hear what you have for us.
Absolute pleasure, Kevin.
Daniel, every time I meet you, your pockets are full of like cool gadgets and stuff. I mean, you have like more everyday carry than I think anybody I've ever met. So
let's talk about that.
Yeah. let's dig into some of this stuff. Start by telling us about this flashlight you like.
Yeah, so I'm definitely the kind of person who, like, even walking around the house on a given day, like for most people who would be in just like sweats and like a ratty old t-shirt, I still do my best to get dressed every day, even through all of quarantine and such. I always have my pockets loaded down. Even at home, I have at least a pocket knife and a flashlight. Those are the two sort of core elements to any everyday carry for me. That I use more than almost anything else. The king of which most people treat as the pocket knife. But in my case, I would actually say the flashlight is the most important piece to my everyday carry at any given time. I can't even count how many different flashlights I've owned over the years. We were going through our earthquake kit, trying to see exactly how many we needed, and they were all left over from like the early 2000s, big old D batteries and such. And without even needing to buy a single flashlight, I had about 15 I was able to tuck away into my family's earthquake kit just without even hesitating. So the one, though, that has sort of earned my affection and my sort of trust, like the item that I trust more than pretty much any item in my EDC at this point, is a Raylite Gemini. Now, Raylite is a little bit of a smaller company. If I'm correct, it's only one or two guys. And they make a really, really premium product at an actually pretty reasonable cost. Now, flashlights, of course, you can just pop like a $5 flashlight in your keychain, no questions asked. It'll probably do 95% of what you need. But I'm definitely someone who's a little bit more rough and tumble with my gear. I use it very heavily. I use it as constantly as possible. And also, as a photographer, I actually often use my flashlights in my lighting. So the Gemini I have is actually a little bit different than your standard one. So the Gemini standard, when it's available, they're actually currently sold out, but they do sort of small runs every now and again. If you drop them a line, I'm sure they'll put you in the next list. But the Raylite I have, instead of having the 2000 lumen standard 3 LED that they offer, I actually opted to drop in a higher CRI, that's color reference index, set of LEDs. So they're not as bright, but they render color much more accurately. So it gives me the ability to, if I'm fixing wiring, if I'm sort of chipping around inside a piece of equipment that I really need to make sure that everything's the sort of the right tone and texture, or if I'm lighting a portrait, I can just as easily bounce this off of a white wall and get a nice neutral daylight cast that really does the skin tone of my subject justice, where most flashlights, you won't be able to say that.
So could you just describe the size and appearance of the flashlight for the benefit of the listeners?
Sure. So the Raylite that I have is the orange Cerakote version. So this was a sprint run that they did.
It's called an orange what?
Cerakote. So Cerakote is a coating more commonly actually seen in the firearms industry. It's a very, very resilient, sort of slightly tacky, ceramic micro coating that's embedded onto, in the case of this flashlight, titanium. So this flashlight in particular is, I'd say, about the length of just a roll, about the same width and length as about 3/4 of a roll of quarters. So I'd say it's about 2 inches long. about 3/4 of an inch in diameter, and it's incredibly solid. A lot of flashlights nowadays, of course, you find in aluminum or in very thin wall titanium. Raylight opts for a much thicker gauge of titanium, so this thing is just overbuilt like a tank. This is the sort of thing you always see those commercials of someone running a flashlight over with a car or whatever it is. This one you could run over with a 747, and I'm sure it would be fine.
What kind of batteries does it take?
So the batteries are one of the only, I wouldn't say complaints, but one of the only caveats against it. So it takes IMR 18350s. So for anyone sort of in the flashlight world, that's sort of the half size of the more standard high-end rechargeable batteries.
Are these rechargeable, the ones that you just mentioned?
Yes, they're rechargeable. They're incredibly high-fidelity batteries, so they last an incredibly long amount of time. And the flashlight itself has a processor in it that is able to modulate the power output so that it really is able to, even on the absolute bare minimum of juice, you can still get full power output for shorter bursts. It's a really impressive little system, but the only downside is if you're traveling or something like that, you usually have to bring the charger with you. And I definitely, when I travel for work or something like that, I always have a AA or a AAA flashlight that also lives in my camera bag just in case.
And how long would the light last on one charge?
Now, that's definitely something that if you go to the specs on the site versus if you just go to real life, realistically, I charged this particular light probably in June last, and I'm using it daily. I'm walking around the backyard at night. We're all night owls at the Shaver household, so often I'm walking out to the jacuzzi, or I'm just digging through some equipment bags that I could use a little extra light. And so it's definitely in daily use, but I've yet to need to charge it. I also often, when I ride my bike, I'll pop it on my helmet so I have a little bit of a POV light. And in that case, it's at full power for an hour or two on end. It can definitely get a little bit warm at that point. But I still have not needed to charge this since June. I'm sure okay. It's due, but it's has a really impressive battery life for the size and the overall sort of everyday carryability.
And I should just mention we're in November right now, so that's about 6 months.
Right. And what's this cost? What is the cost?
So my particular one, because I was looking for the orange Cerakote version. I was having a little bit of a hard time finding it. And they actually were not currently doing an orange sprint run. I think the last time they did this in the orange specifically was probably in early 2019. Currently, I think the last two runs were satin finish and black Cerakote, but I really wanted the orange. I'm a sucker for orange. A lot of my Pelican cases are orange. I use a lot of high-vis stuff in my equipment. So I dropped them a line, and Ian, the guy who runs the company, was incredibly nice and was willing to throw just one extra into the batch. So I paid a little bit of a premium, so I had what I wanted. In the end, I spent $170, when typically the flashlights come in around $110 to $130. It's definitely on the sort of mid-high end for the flashlight world. In the everyday carry community, it is not surprising to see guys carrying $200, $400 Surefires, or even some of the more expensive stuff is almost in the $1,000 range for a pocket flashlight. I don't flex quite that hard, nor do I ever plan on it. But just as an honorable mention, the little keychain light that I have by Rovivon, which is just a mini USB rechargeable, lives on my keys and gets probably just as much use and was only $30. So it really comes down to what your sort of everyday use standards are. And for something that rides in my back pocket literally every day, whether I'm leaving the house or not, $170 was a perfectly acceptable price for me.
The replacement batteries or having a swap battery, do you have an idea of what the batteries run? Are they like electric cars where most of the cost is actually in the battery? Or is this electric cordless tools? Or are the replacement substitute batteries pretty reasonable?
Yeah, you can definitely – the thing with when it comes to any of the sort of 1,200 range of batteries – They do range in price. There are some higher end models and there are some lower end models. Of course, in the world of batteries, you get a lot of the sort of Wasabi off brands and stuff like that that are actually quite reliable. But when it comes to flashlights, especially high output ones that can generate some heat, I tend to sort of go for the mid-range, closer to name brands. In my personal one, I use Key Power batteries. That's KEEPOWER. Really, really reliable. I've yet to have one fail. I've yet to have one overheat. I've yet to have one rupture, which in the realm of long-term use rechargeables is an issue. And in the titanium flashlights, if they rupture, it's almost impossible to get them out. So it's worth finding a reliable brand. I think two of them cost me $30 at the time that I bought them. And I use a charger that's a universal one made by CountyCom. That's another one of my honorable mention companies. I'd say out of all of my everyday carry items, there's probably at minimum a Maritac CountyCom zipper pull on every flashlight, every pocket knife. And they're a company that I go to time and time and time again for many of my gadget needs.
What is a zipper pull? I don't understand what that is.
So a zipper pull, if you have a jacket, it's just a little thing that you can add. So if you have gloves on, for example, it's easier to find your zipper. CountyCom is actually a company that has a lot of government contracts. So sort of mid-level military contracts, everything from radios to MOLLE gear for soldiers, various things like this. It's not strictly a tactical company. I'm not personally that big of a fan of tactical style EDC, which is definitely popular. But the zipper pulls, in this case, they have really excellent glow-in-the-dark sort of U-shaped oversized zipper pulls. And I actually put them on all of my gear so they're easy to pull out of the pocket. The clip on the Raylight is pretty sturdy, so if it's in your pocket, it is not coming out. And without having the zipper pull, it can be a little bit of a struggle to get it out. But with the zipper pull, I just grab my finger, pop it out, and it's no problem at all.
One of the I like little flashlights too, and I have them spread all over, but I have the much cheaper versions that run on a single double A.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of stuff like that. I'm a big fan of Phoenix lights for any of my...
Yeah, I have some Phoenixes all over the house, basically.
Yeah, but excellent lights. I've carried them in high school.
One of my favorite flashlights is one that fits in a coin pocket.
Yes.
It's really, really tiny. And I found that that was actually... The place I wanted to carry a flashlight was it's very accessible and very tiny. And it's not like one of those photon things that tiny. It was a little bit bigger, mm-hmm. a little bit more powerful. And so I wonder if that's in your toolkit as well.
Absolutely. So for me, I have what I like to call my nunchucks, which are a couple of different combinations. And this is something I've carried. I sort of came up with this method of carry in high school, and I've stuck with it since because I love using my lighter pocket. It's that lighter pocket coin pocket is a perfect spot for smaller stuff. Also, back when I was in high school, I worked as a magician at the Magic Castle. In which cases, all of my equipment had to be a little bit more formal, a little bit more stylish, or a little bit easier to tuck away into a suit jacket pocket or into sort of the coin pocket in a pair of slacks. And what I do, sort of that nunchuck style, is I actually carry a small Swiss Army knife, like a mini champ. I really am a fan of the ones that have the built-in pen. And then just using a little keychain, I usually I would use a little Phoenix, I think they were EO2s, were their smallest offering at the time, and you could link them, and it was almost like a little pair of nunchucks where you had the little Swiss Army knife and you had the little Phoenix side by side. Nowadays, the small flashlight that has won my heart is the Rovivon models. Most of them are USB rechargeable, which I really like for just a keychain light. But I'm still every so often, especially if I'm traveling, I'll swap the Rovivon out for a Phoenix because having the ability to just grab a AAA battery at a hardware store or even sometimes after you've gone through airport security at Hudson News, having that extra bit of flexibility is a really important element to any of my travel kits.
Cool. Very good. Thanks for the whole update on
flashlights. Yeah.
Another thing you keep in your pocket is a wallet, a custom front left pocket wallet. Tell us, what is a front left pocket wallet?
So a wallet is something that has plagued me literally ever since I was a kid, literally since like the seventh grade, when all I had to keep in it was $6 and a school ID. Like it was just one of those things where my dad was one of those guys who always had just the classic black leather bifold, overstuffed with receipts. Like it seemed like the whole world was kept in there. And I always loved that. But at the same time, it just drove me insane trying to throw a wallet in my back pocket. And truly, I would find a new wallet or even make them out of duct tape or various things throughout my life. And when I started doing photography professionally, one element of that standard immediately had to change. Essentially, because I'm a photographer, I need to have access to memory cards relatively easily. And in addition to keeping a little standard card wallet that's like a hard body just for SD cards in my camera bag, having the ability to have three or four SD cards on me at all times, sort of as in case of emergency, if a card fills up or if a card gets corrupted, that I can just pop a new one in, was very important. And so I was on a hunt for an SD card holder that you could just pop in your wallet. And for years there wasn't one. And then a company called SDcardholder.com came out with a really excellent, just, it's a single piece of printed plastic. The first runs were 3D printed. Now they're in, I believe they're injection, but you could keep four cards in a really rigid, nice little thing. The problem becomes when you're a photographer and you have these SD cards, which can run you between like $60 on the low end for professional cards to like $200, $300 for some of the higher capacity ones, even with as cheap as storage is today, to get the really professional grade video cards, you're still running a couple hundred dollars a card, not to mention the fact that your livelihood is stored on that card. So if I have a job and it's on that card and I pop it in my wallet, I need that to stay in shape. And the problem is with a leather wallet, even in a card holder, they flex, they twist, and in the end, they chip and they shatter. And like one of the most hair-raising things is trying to get 2,000 photos from a wedding off of a card that literally has no physical body anymore.
Oh my God. Has that happened to you before?
It's happened to me twice, and that's part of why, in the long run, I actually ditched leather wallets altogether. Now, luckily, I was sort of imbued with enough of the sort of extra tier of computer nerd that I knew how to deal with that, and I had sort of the extra hardware to deal with that. But most photographers don't have that access, and also I only have that access when I'm at home. And over the past 5 years, I traveled probably 10 months of the year, at sort of at minimum. And so having something that was really reliable and kept it in shape, I started turning to the various sort of hard body plastic wallets. When I had a little extra cash, I would try one of the titanium ones. And I never found one that I was really satisfied with. The cards were always somewhat exposed, or it had open edges, or it was kind of fiddly to open, or it relied on a spring. I do have a habit of, I pick various things up, and I do my best. If it's a mom and pop shop, I tend not to return. I'll either re-gift it or I'll just cycle it into some other use in my carry. Often if something can't be my everyday wallet, it just becomes the card holder in my camera bag.
So my wife and my daughters and my kids have migrated to using their phone case as their wallet. So they have their phone and a wallet.
Exactly. And I tried that as well. The problem is, since I traveled so much, I was never able to get away with having more, really less than probably 8 to 10 cards most of the time. Between car insurance and rental membership cards and things that, for the most part, nowadays you can store certain things on your phone in sort of your digital wallet, but those SD cards still take up about a quarter inch of space. So it's hard to find hard body wallets that could accommodate things. After years of everything from just sort of plastic sort of snap business card cases to like $80 titanium Travax wallets, which that was regifted. And luckily my friend is a huge EDC nerd and was super excited to get that for his birthday, even though it had ridden in my pocket for a couple of weeks. My last wallet that I actually loved for a long time was funny enough, of course, being in California, this is one of those things you stumble into, was a hand-carved wooden joint case, which I'm not a smoker, but it fit my cards perfectly. And I had that for a while, but it was less than reliable when you're working and it has any pressure on it. And it sadly broke more than once. So of course, as most people who are sort of in the EDC everyday carry community, I troll through Instagram trying to find cool gear, and I'm a big fan of finding, small makers or Etsy shops. I try really hard not to buy anything from, Amazon or, even like REI is about as close to a big company that I will buy things from readily. I try really hard to get everything from individuals as best I can. And one day I was scrolling through and I saw this really excellent front pocket wallet. And I'm not the kind of guy who keeps a wallet in his back pocket. I just find it uncomfortable. So my wallet's always ridden in my front left pocket. And essentially what that means is that it has to either be compact enough to sort of nestle into the corner of the pocket, or in the case of this one, it is actually shaped to the pocket. So it has sort of that that dipped curve with one side low as a pair of jean pockets would. And this particular one was made by a guy named Shane Sanchez. He goes by Sanch33 on Instagram. And he's not a particularly big maker, but he is an absolutely excellent leather worker. Truly, like, one of the best I've ever had. Like, I've had belts made in the past. I've even had to get I get shoes repaired every so often. I haven't found a leather worker that works in this level of quality in years. And so I hit him up on Instagram. His profile is actually private, so I had to wait for him to accept the follow. I was like, hey, man, I love that wallet. Can you make it to these specifications? And he was like, yeah, that seems great, but you might want to, like, I don't know if that'll fit. And so what ended up happening is I actually took some calipers. I measured the exact thickness of my standard number of cards. And then I actually sent him my favorite pen and my favorite beard comb. And he built the wallet to the standards of it will fit these this amount of cards. And then he actually molded the leather onto my two carry items. So it all fits in a perfect package. Now, it's a little thicker than most of the wallets I've had in the past, but the fact that it just drops into the pocket and lives there so nicely, it vanishes despite being so wide.
Well, that's a great suggestion. And what does it cost?
So this one, again, for me, I'm more than happy to spend on custom work, especially if I'm supporting someone who, like, this is something they do either for a living or if it's something they do as sort of a side hustle. And I was so impressed by the quality that I did not hesitate to order it. In the end, it cost me $125, not including having to ship my gear to him, which probably only cost like $10. So definitely a little bit more on the expensive side for a wallet, but
not really.
In comparison, if you're getting a handmade leather wallet, you're sort of in the 200 range. If you're getting any of those titanium wallets, even off of any of the Kickstarters, you're easily at $80, if not $200 to $400 for some of the fancy custom versions. So at $125 and just like a dude putting this together in his the level of quality, like the smoothed fused edges of this leather are honestly better than some Italian shoes I've seen going for $2,000.
That sounds great.
So what's your third tool that you wanted to tell us about?
So I chose to feature items that were sort of customized, things that I got from smaller makers. So the Raylight is a one-man company, if not just a little larger. Shane is literally a dad with an Instagram page who just killer work. And the third one, sort of my holy grail. Now, I'm not going to talk about pocket knives because I could literally sit here for 2 hours just talking about single blade everyday carry pocket knives. I've collected them since I was a kid. I absolutely like I do not leave the house without some kind of edge tool. It's an invaluable thing for an everyday carry. That being said, I really like the ability to carry pliers. I like having scissors. I like having tools of sort of varied uses that a single edge can't necessarily do, or I need a little bit of leverage on something. So I've carried everything from the Leatherman Skeletool, the Wave, dozens of Swiss Army knives over the year, and I've always had trouble finding something that didn't feel redundant. So if you grab pretty much any multi-tool, aside from maybe the Skeletool, the Leatherman Wave, the blade is not great. And so often I just don't really want it or need it. I already have a single blade pocket knife riding in my right pocket. And so I've been on a quest literally for almost 10 years trying to find the perfect Swiss Army knife. And what I've been trying to find, and this is a thing that's it's sort of been quiet in the everyday carry community literally since I was in high school, but has now showed up a little bit more in the premium market, are customized Swiss Army knives. You can follow the hashtag custom SAK, and you'll see really impeccable work by guys like Beaver Blade Works, by any number of different makers. And they come at a pretty serious premium. Now, these tools have custom scales. They have different tool sets. And literally, these guys are able to take, like, I want this tool, this tool, this tool, and I want G10 scales, or I want...
I'm not sure what a scale... What do you mean by scales?
So, like, so on the Swiss Army knife, just the handles, like the red pieces of plastic. You can pop those off pretty easily.
Are those called scales?
Yes. So and once they get interchangeable, people mostly call them scales. And most of the guys, when you see the custom ones, they're throwing titanium on. They're throwing on like stuff like G10, which is a high grip plastic that you see a lot in pocket knives in the gun world. So there's all these really, really excellent options. But they come at a serious premium and in very small batches. Guys like Beaver Blade Works.
Right. Is the idea that they start with an official kind of Swiss Army knife and then they either modify the outsides or they add different tools onto the interior? Is that the general idea?
Exactly. So the simplest version is just a scale swap. So you take a completely normal, something like a Super Tinker or a Spartan, like some of the more classic Swiss Army knives. You just pop off the red scales and you epoxy on a fresh set of really nice polished titanium, something bead blasted maybe that's a little more rugged, or swap it out for G10, which is still plastic, but much, much grippier and more durable. Now, once you get into the slightly more complicated versions, they're actually taking apart the tool, drilling out the rivets, and can change the tools themselves to make combinations that don't actually exist in the standard Swiss Army knife catalog. So you'll see stuff like electrician blades or sometimes even full-size pocket knife blades like from Spyderco Delica or Spyderco Urban, which is a full-size $150 knife, but they've taken the blade off of that and actually sandwiched it into a Swiss Army knife, which they're called Spidey Sacks. They look hilarious, but honestly, I really want one still. all of these come at a pretty serious premium. If you're looking into the custom SAK market, once you get into those tool mods, kind of a minimum is $200, $300.
Is this much of a do-it-yourself kind of thing where people are, you know, kind of having YouTube channels where they're showing you how they do it? Or is this more like these are craftsmen who are doing this for like an Etsy, like a side hustle or something?
So it's sort of a yes and no to both. And so essentially, if you're just doing scale swaps, often what you do is they literally just send you in the mail the scales, a little tube of like the two-part mix epoxy, and that That's a DIY. You can do that at home yourself, no problem at all. You could even like acid wash the tools or something yourself. There's all sorts of cool finish things that are definitely DIY. Sadly, there's not really that big of a YouTube scene for stuff like this. The closest I would say is like Blade HQ, which is one of the bigger pocket knife buying sites, has a really excellent series. They show you how to stonewash things and how to acid wash and like grind G10 or make a canvas micarta, which is sort of a pressure epoxy linen handle material. So there's a little bit of DIY. But once you get into the tool swaps, that is definitely a specialized artisan style of modification. It requires a drill press. It requires some pretty serious measuring tools because the tolerances on a Swiss Army knife, a thing that you probably your great grandfather had in his pocket, are higher than much people would expect. There is very, very little margin for error when you're modifying those tools. And so back to the tool that I chose. The tool I've been looking for literally for 10 years was a full size, not a keychain size, but a full size Swiss Army knife without a blade with both pliers and scissors. This does not exist and has not existed in any catalog that Victorinox, Wanger, any of the Swiss Army knife companies have ever put out. It always has an edge. They do make smaller tools, like keychain size tools without a blade, but those are not what I'm looking for. I was looking for something that had like the really excellent 91 millimeter pliers, the matched scissors, and really as few tools as possible in addition to that. So I started this off hitting guys up on Etsy and via Instagram literally when I was like 16, 17. Like it started even actually prior to Instagram and stuff on like Blade forums or on Tool Geeks, a website that's now gone called toolgeeks.com. I think at least in the iteration I knew it is no longer existent. But every time I would hit up guys who really did impeccable work, they would tell me it just can't be done. Reason being the scissors and the pliers. When you get the Swiss Army knife, they have these back springs, and the thing that gives the scissors and the pliers the proper leverage is the fact that they are paired on that same back spring with the blade, and that all the other tools you can drop into that slot are too thick and do not allow you to do the modification. And so I've asked literally if there is someone on Instagram or Etsy at this point, I have asked them if they could do it, and not once have I gotten the answer yes. Then I stumbled upon, again, just going through sort of other guys' pages, a build that a guy had taken a full-size pair of pliers and dropped it in next to a Spidey blade. So a Spyderco Urban blade that had been dropped in. And I looked at it and immediately saw that there was no second spring blade that is what typically would be required to mount the pliers. I immediately messaged the guy who posted it and said, hey, where did you get that? Because no one was tagged. He told me it was a guy named Toolsalot. That's T-O-O-L-S-A-L-O-T. Shane, the guy who made my wallet, private page. But once you open it up, you see plenty of his work, really, really excellent photos. If you go to Toolsalot, it is a blank profile. Excellent, excellent work, but nothing on the page. I know nothing about the person who made this tool. So I messaged them and said, hey, I'm looking for kind of a specific thing. I want a full-size Swiss Army knife with scissors and pliers and as few other tools as possible, no blade, and brass scales. Without any hesitation, the guy said, oh yeah, no problem. A week later, he sent me photographs of the exact tool I had been praying for the entire time. It had everything I needed. It has just the pliers, the small screwdriver, the small can opener, the full-size scissors, and the corkscrew. That's truly as few tools as you could throw onto this thing and still have it function.
And how much was it?
So this one cost me $125, which again, for custom work and for this tool, is insanely underpriced. If you were to get a metal, like an ALOX scale, which is the metal scales that Victorinox themselves offer, almost any comparable tool that has this sort of build quality and number of tools is at minimum $80, if not in the $150 range.
Right. So Daniel, we have just a few more minutes before we have to go on, but can you tell us about your fourth tool and maybe it's not an everyday carry, I don't know, something else that in your wide range, maybe as a photographer, maybe as a frequent traveler, that you'd want to share with us?
So as a photographer, one of the hardest things nowadays, especially in the photo market, is making your work immediately visually recognizable and different. There's so many really like excellent amateur photographers and excellent professional photographers all sort of sharing via the same medium nowadays. So it's really hard to make your work stand out. I've always been a sucker for handmade, vintage, strange objects and such. So it was a natural path for me to take into vintage optics. Essentially, the lenses that I look for are sort of unusual, off-brand, things you wouldn't expect. So I'm a big fan of just like work that I've done for Netflix and for Vogue and Harper's has been shot on $10 lenses that I bought at thrift shops. Now, some of those are just old Vivitars. Some of them are just mismarked ingenues, which are incredible, incredible lenses. So by dropping into the world of vintage lenses, you immediately give yourself a lot of extra flavor when it comes to the images. You give yourself a little extra sort of building block of creativity. And just gives your images an immediately different look from almost anyone else, because once you get into those vintage lenses, no two are the same.
And these are lenses for what camera?
So I run them on a Sony A7S. I actually still prefer the first generation of the Sony, even though there's been several since. But they're essentially rangefinder optics, so meant for the Leica M mount. And the nice thing about the Sony is I can throw on really any lens mount I want. I can use the Leica M, I can use the Nikon F, I can use old Minolta Rokor, really anything I want to throw on, this camera takes with absolutely no problem. And even though it's a really, really excellent digital chip, it can still render beautifully with vintage optics.
And so do you need an adapter to put them on, or do they just screw right on without an adapter?
You definitely need an adapter, but the nice thing is nowadays, if you're digging through most camera stores, or of course Amazon, which I tend to try to avoid, but adapters for almost any lens, there's always going to be a $20 version and there's always going to be a $200 version. It just comes down to what level of durability you want. And honestly, even as someone who uses these professionally, I still tend to go for the cheaper ones because they're usually just as well made.
And for these vintage lenses, is this something you do by trolling Craigslist? Where do you, or just
a little bit of everything? Estate sales, Craigslist. I'm a big fan of antique malls specifically. You tend to find good stuff because people have just sort of bought a space, thrown something on consignment. I've bought lenses everywhere from just on the road driving through Montana to from a specific shelf in a camera store in France that I saw in the background of a friend's photo from their vacation. And I found that camera store and called them internationally to get lenses. So there's really a million different ways for you to find stuff. Sometimes it's on eBay. Sometimes it's just like something that a relative has had sitting in a closet for 30 years. It's always worth, if you find a cool optic and you're into photography, grab it, figure out what mount it is, drop a little bit of cash in the adapter, and you might have found a total gem.
Maybe you can tell us about what project you've been working on and you're excited by.
So yeah, I have written for most of the seasons of Z Nation for the Sci-Fi Network, which you can now find on Netflix, as well as the Netflix original Black Summer. There's one season available on Netflix right now. It's a excellent high-energy horror zombie binge. Pro tip. change your screen to black and white because that's how we pitched it and wanted to shoot it, but they wouldn't let us.
It's such a great show.
Your role there, as you say, you're writing, meaning
yes, I'm one of the screenwriters. I also helped with a lot of the location scouting and did a lot of the behind the scenes photography on both shows. The first season is available for Black Summer. All five seasons are available for Z Nation. Definitely, if you're watching Black Summer, watch it all in one sitting. We always like to say, let it ruin your Saturday afternoon. Just sit down. It's only about 4.5 hours for the 8 episodes, and it moves like a freight train on fire. Now, our second season was in production at the beginning of the year, and of course, had to halt because of quarantine. Now, we shot up in Calgary, Alberta, which luckily they did an amazing job at managing the crisis in that city. And they were actually able to get back into production after a couple of weeks of quarantining some of the American crew. And they've actually just finished filming the season. We were one of the first Netflix shows, if not the first, to resume filming. And we finished filming. Everything's in editorial now. And hopefully we'll be seeing season two sooner rather than later.
Well, I look forward to that. I really do. I didn't know about them, and now I do. So I appreciate your alerting us to them, and knowing that you were involved is a double the pleasure. So thank you for sharing with us your pockets full of treasures. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, guys. I appreciate you letting me rant on all the lovely nonsense I choose to carry with me.
So awesome, Daniel. It's always great catching up with you and finding out what you're up to. And yeah, again, just my recommendation for Black Summer, Carl and I loved it. And we've been bugging you a long time about the next season. So I'm so glad it's really happening. Thanks so
much. I know we're revving and ready to see it ourselves. I hope everyone who's able to check it out really enjoys it.
Hey everybody, it's your host Mark, and I wanted to thank you for listening to the Cool Tools Show. And I also wanted to let you know that we've got a lot more going on at Cool Tools than just this podcast. We also have the Cool Tools website, which has a new tool review every day, and you can get there by going to cool-tools.org. We also have 4 different newsletters that you can subscribe to, and you can subscribe to those from the Cool Tools page. We have this podcast that you're listening to right now. We also have a YouTube channel where we review tools. Check that YouTube channel out by going to youtube.com/cooltools. And one of the things I'd like to ask you is, if you're really enjoying everything that we are producing, go to our Patreon page and support us there. You can sign up and give us as little as $1 a month, and that would mean a lot to us. The money that we get from Patreon goes towards a lot of things. We transcribe our podcast interviews so that you can read them online. We pay for editing of our podcasts and for our videos. We pay our contributors. We have video production costs. We have equipment costs. We have hosting costs. And the money you give us through Patreon also goes to support Cool Tools Lab. Anything you give is a huge help. And one of the things that we do is, if you are a contributor to Patreon, we'll give you a shout out on air. And so I have a few people here to thank this week. Mark Lyonage, Micah Gates, Monty Zukowski, Patrick James McNally, Robert Cohen, Scott, Spence Lloyd, Steve Avery, Steve Golden, Steve Levine, Tom Hess, William Phillips, Aaron Nipper, Dharab Patel, Glenn Mercer, Jay Walker, Jeff Bonair, Ryan Jarrell, Pat Daly, Patrick Kennedy, Troy Wallett, Mike Camerate, Nicole Harkin, Tim Youssef, Scott Reed. Thanks all of you for supporting Cool Tools. And if you would like to have a shout out, go over to the Patreon page and sign up. And thanks for listening to the Cool Tools Podcast. We'll see you next week.